Today the world is filled with anxiety. The world itself is in the throes of a universal anxiety neurosis. Every civilized nation is desperately seeking peace. And every family is searching frantically for security. And every human soul is seeking serenity and peace of mind and peace of soul. This fact is attested to very dramatically by the tremendous sale that two books of recent years had, namely Joshua Liebman's Peace of Mind and Bishop Sheen's Peace of Soul. Now, when we speak of serenity in AA, contrary to popular belief, it is not peace of mind. It is not peace of soul. It is not peace of heart. It isn't even contentment, nor is it happiness in itself. Serenity is something far beyond those states. Because after all, peace of mind means an absence of mental conflict. Peace of soul means an absence of moral conflicts. Peace of heart means an absence of emotional conflicts. Happiness means to be glad to have what I have in life. And contentment means at least satisfied with what I have. Whereas serenity is the undisturbed higher faculties of the soul, in spite of mental conflicts, in spite of moral conflicts, in spite of emotional conflicts, even in spite of material unhappiness and discontentment. It is that peace that the Lord refers to which is beyond all understanding, serenity. Now, every alcoholic, perhaps more so than the average person in life, has spent much time and energy in a futile attempt to find this serenity. Most alcoholics, at least on occasion, have desperately endeavored to find God. Certainly, all members of Alcoholics Anonymous, prior to finding AA, have failed to find either peace of mind or peace of soul or God himself. Another goodly number of alcoholics have even failed to find peace of mind or God or AA. They have stumbled off the cliff of despair as a tragic ending to their confused thinking and living. There's papers which were left by one such individual who, after constantly seeking and never finding this sense of peace, he took the hard way out. He committed suicide. And in the papers that he left, he wrote, quote, "All alcoholics who are struggling to throw off the shackles of their weakness are subjects of my compassion. I am an alcoholic, and I feel that no matter how degraded an alcoholic may be, there abides somewhere deep within him a deathless urge to reach out beyond the sordidness and the deceit and the folly and the ignorance and the sham of this world to grasp that elusive something which spells kinship with the lovely in life. And I believe," he goes on to say, "that once even one so much as brushes his fingers against this greater understanding, He has attained that for which every soul seeks, maybe by varied and divergent channels, but nonetheless seeks. It is a strange and miserable world in which the alcoholic lives, made so much more strange and miserable by the fact that he lives in two hemispheres, the normal and the abnormal. And there is never, nor can there ever be, real understanding on the part of the normal for the abnormal. Of all human afflicted, physically and mentally, the lot of the sensitive alcoholic is the hardest. And just as the lot of the man struck blind is more agonizing because he could once see, so is the alcoholic's lot the more difficult because he was once free. Few sufferers can lean upon the straw of conviction that they are expiating wrongdoing through mental torture when they are unable to understand why they erred, when their acts were contrary to their own innermost conviction. And then he goes on, and so I go on trying to understand, to grasp him who could help me. It is a battle of a soul unsupported. If I only could see again and get the peace I had in the dark of God. But my heart in this darkness is a three-tongued flame of despair, self-condemnation, and terror. Unquote. How that echoes the words of the author of The Hound of Heaven, who wrote, I fled him down the nights and down the days, down the labyrinthine ways of my own mind I sped. How many alcoholics, every alcoholic, has tried time and time again to find that outlet which always seemed to end in a street without an ending. Then finally we were fortunate. We found Alcoholics Anonymous. Remember? Remember when that happened? The first time we read the AA book, and then we came to chapter 5 on how it works. And there we read, rarely have we seen a person fail who thoroughly follows our path. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. And then we read the 12 steps, and we reread the 12 steps. And then came our first prospect. We didn't pull punches in those days, remember? We didn't try to excuse the God angle or try to apologize for the spiritual side. We lived AA as AA was written in the AA book. And in that AA book, believe it or not, it tells us, quote, tell them exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he be willing to live by spiritual principles. Unquote. That's in the AA book. And so we lived a spiritual life. And then something happened. Somewhere along the months or years, either from the first step Johns and Jills, or the dry drunks, or the no God guys and gals, we begin to doubt. And we started to question ourselves. And we thought, well, maybe an old timer like me don't need that no more. And then we began to become unhappy. And we got jittery again. And we got restless and sleepless. And then we began that endless question, why? And it's the most asked question that I find in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have men and women come to me time after time again and say, look, Father, what's the matter with me? I've been in AA 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but something's wrong. Something's missing. I used to be happy. I had a little serenity, but I ain't got it no more. What's the matter? Well, I can only give you what in my opinion is the matter. And that opinion tells me that those who are no longer happy in AA, who have no longer serenity in their life or living, never have fully, or if they ever fully did, they took it back, taking the third step of the AA program. And that third step tells us we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Now there's two happenings in history that might help us to understand this factor. The first has to do with Peter, the lovable old Peter, the fisherman. No education, but with the utmost of sincerity. You remember the story? He was out fishing all night and he caught nothing. You can imagine what he was thinking when he came back to the shore. He was talking to himself probably or to the other and said, all night long and not even a bite. I don't know what else he said, but he said more than that. And then as they neared the shore, they suddenly saw there on the shore the Lord. And Peter, it says, was naked. I guess that's the way they fished in those days. I don't know. And in order to cover himself up, he threw a cloth or a shawl or something around himself. And the Lord says, hello, Peter, what you been doing? Peter says, we've been fishing. And we haven't caught anything. I can just imagine the emphasis on that. Did the Lord commiserate with him? Did the Lord say, oh, you poor guy, ain't that awful? No. The Lord says, go out into the deep and let down your net. Now, can't you imagine what Peter thought inside? I tell him we fished all night. And we caught nothing. Absolutely nothing. And he tells me, go out into the deep again. But with his sincerity and humility, he probably followed up immediately inside, but it's the Lord, he said so, I'll do it. And he went out, and they let down the net, and you know what happened. They caught so many fish that the nets broke. And Peter was happy. And the rest of them were happy. Because he caught so many fish? No. Because God's will had been accomplished through his willingness to let go and let God. The same thing happened in the case of the little Jewish girl named Mary. Remember? When she was told she was to become the mother of Christ? What did she do? Did she say, oh no, why, I'm not worthy to do that? No, we must have the wrong person. No, in her humility, in her honesty, well, is it God's will? It's God's will. It was all that was necessary. She said, be it done unto me according to thy word. Behold the handmaid of the Lord. And Mary was happy. Because she was to become the mother of Christ, not in particular, but because the will of God was being accomplished through her. She had let go, and she had let God. Now, you know, the program of AA is not so much a program to build up character. That's ridiculous. The program is one to destroy our past character, to clean out the wreckage of what our so-called character of the past did. And that is brought about by repeated surrender, by repeated giving in. So then God can rebuild a new character. So we don't have to sit back and figure out how are we going to rebuild our character. All we have to do is to give in and let God build according as He wills it. Let go and let God. That's the reason that sobriety is not the result of strength of will. Sobriety is the result of the weakening and the giving in of a rebellious will. Let's face it. It doesn't take strength of will. Let go and let God. And when we do, we perhaps will understand for the first time in our lives what that term which was used so frequently during the Second World War really means. Unconditional surrender. Let go of all our preconceived ideas and learn what God will teach. You know, we often hear in AA a speaker say, well, now I've been dry, been sober 7 years, 6 years, 8 years, but I had nothing to do with it. God did it all. Well, you know, I used to think that was a lot of claptrap, a lot of pietistic music. But I've changed my mind quite a bit. And I think the older we get in AA, the more we mature, the more we see and hear, and the more we look inside, the more we realize I had nothing to do with it. God did it all. I'm not kidding myself. I know why I am sober tonight. I know why I'm here tonight. God did it all. Matt Talbot made that remark, you know, in one of his notes that he left. Matt Talbot, by the way, was an alcoholic in Dublin, Ireland. He died about 1925 after being sober for about 40 years, and not only sober, but living a very saintly life. And he is, as we say in our church, up for canonization. And if and when he's canonized, we're going to have one up there, that's for sure. But in some notes that he left, he made the statement, I had nothing to do with it. God did it all. Christopher Columbus made the same remark when he wrote a letter to Ferdinand and Isabella after he had discovered America. You know, there are some who say that Christopher Columbus was an alcoholic. Well, I don't know whether he was or not, but the reason is that they say when he left Spain, he didn't know where he was going. When he got to America, he didn't know where he was. And a woman financed the whole deal. Christopher Columbus wrote to Ferdinand and Isabella the following, quote, but these great and marvelous results are not to be attributed to any merit of mine, but to the holy faith in God, for that which the unaided intellect of man could not encompass, the Spirit of God has freely granted, unquote. So all we need is willingness. Not willpower, want power. Willingness. God will accomplish if we let go and let God. That's all we have to do. Now let's see how this works first in the 12 steps. And the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Is that a full admission? Have we let go of all those reservations? Or do we have a few left? Or do we have a few that tells us once in a while, well, maybe someday, maybe I will. Maybe I can. And I do. Or maybe a couple beers might not be so bad. Did we admit that our lives were unmanageable, or have we pushed God out of the driver's seat again? If we have, it won't work. We won't have serenity. The second step tells us we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Came to believe. Now we have three types who come to AA. First, the atheist or agnostic. He's the guy or gal who, well, he either doesn't believe in God, or if he does, he doesn't know too much about it. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. To those people, I say, all they need is honesty. Let go of their preconceived ideas. God will do the rest. The second type that come to AA are the confused believers. They are the bulk of AAs. Most people who come to AA believe in God, in a sense, but they don't know much how or why. And what they did have once, they don't know much about no more. All they need is honest, keep on keeping on. Let go, let God clear up their fate. Don't ask ever nincompoop you meet. He's probably more confused than you. Let go. Let God give you clarity of faith. He will. The third class are the frustrated church members. Quite a few of those in AA. They are the ones who tried their church, so they thought, and they felt their church let them down. Again, all they have to do is let go. Just go along day in and day out. Don't rush it. Don't push it. Don't search it. Be willing. Let go. And God will again clarify himself to them. And then comes the next step, which to me is the most important step of all the AA 12 steps. From it flows, if taken 100%, the serenity and all the rest that goes with it that anyone has in AA today. And to me, this is the crux of the program. And all we need in taking the third step is absolute confidence, childlikeness, acceptance, acceptance, acceptance. Have you ever tried it? Let's try it. Oh God, we believe so firmly that you watch over all who hope in thee, and that we can want for nothing when we fully rely on you for all things, that we are resolved no longer to have any anxiety, and to cast all of our cares on you. In peace and in the selfsame, I shall sleep and take my rest. For thou, O Lord, hast settled me in hope. We may lose all our material things. Sickness may take from us our strength to do your work. We may even lose thy grace by sin. But our trust shall never leave us, and we shall preserve that to the last second of our life. No power shall ever wrest that from us. In peace and in the selfsame, we shall sleep and take our rest. Let others seek peace and happiness in their talents and in their money. Let them trust in the purity of their lives, the severity of their sacrifices, the number of their good works, the many whom they've sponsored, the years of their sobriety, the calls they may have made, the talks they may have given, the number whom they have actually helped. Yes, even their own renewed strength, or even the fervor and the number of their prayers. But for us, O God, in our confidence itself lies all our hope and all our trust. For Thou, O Lord, hast settled us in Thy hope. And therefore, in peace and in the selfsame, we shall sleep and take our rest. We know, alas, we know too well that we are weak and changeable and powerless, that we are only humans, that our lives, all of it, is unmanageable. We also know the power of temptation against the strongest of virtues. We have seen the strong fall and the pillars of strength totter. But these things alarm us not, for it is precisely because we are so absolutely powerless that we therefore become so strong and so sure in You. And this trust shall endure until the last breath of our lives, because You, O Lord, will sustain it in us. Finally, we know that our confidence in You cannot exceed Your bounty. Therefore, we shall always expect from Your goodness alone, and because of no merit of ours, strength in every struggle, grace in every temptation, victory in spite of and because of weakness, and peace of soul, mind and heart, and true serenity in spite of every possible disturbance. And there you have it. And all we have to do now is to be on our way. And whatever happens, whatever we meet, within or without, from others or from ourselves, just let it go. God is our sufficiency. Or as Teresa wrote, let nothing disturb thee, nothing affright thee. All things are passing. God never changeth. Patient acceptance attaineth to all things, whom God possesseth in nothing is wanting. Alone God sufficeth. Our job, that's the footwork. Acceptance, acceptance, acceptance. It works. It really does. The fourth step, we made a fearless and searching inventory of ourselves. In other words, we made a searching inventory in order to let the light of God's grace in. We wanted to know ourselves as God knows us. Fearless, because we have heard God tell us, fear not. If God be with us, who can be against us? Even if we shall walk in the valley of death, we shall not fear, because God is with us. And even though Thou slay us, yet will we trust You. Fearless and searching. The fifth step, admitted to God through ourselves and to another human being. And how many begin again to be afraid? Afraid of what? Afraid of what God will think? He knows it better than you do. Now, He knows the stench of the past. Afraid of what others might think? What difference does that make? They are probably worse than we are, if they were honest. Afraid of what we might have to change. That's the rub. That's the rub. And yet, whom are we kidding? It hasn't been too long ago when any change would have been for the better. Remember? In the sixth step, we're entirely ready to have God remove these shortcomings. In other words, we're willing, we're ready. Let go all of them, of the resentments, of the fears, the self-pity, the dishonesties, the sinful relationships. Let God in His way take over. As the poet tells us, thus have I formed thee with my shaking hand, lest I should be the greater sculptor. Form me, O God, even though filled with faults, according to thy image, make me truly free. The first of men thou madest of clay, of hardened clay, alas, am I. But thou wilt have to use a hammer. Strike, O sculptor God, for I am but the stone. Let it go. What gives the pain? It's our kicking against the will of God. Take the example of the child in its mother's arms. As long as it lies there quietly, even goes to sleep, nothing's going to harm it. But it starts yelling, trying to get away. Going to get hurt. Discontentment is kicking against the will of God. The seventh step. Humbly ask Him to remove these shortcomings. Ask Him with faith, but not afraid to give them up. You know, there's some of us don't like to give up our shortcomings. We want to hang on to them. We're afraid that God will take them away. We won't have anything else. So in the sixth step, we were ready. Now we ask Him to go ahead. Okay, God, I'll fit in. Do with me what you want. I'll fit in. Day in and day out. In the beginning of the day as the sun rises. At the end of the day as the sun sets, whatever God sends, I'll fit in. Let go, let God. The eighth step made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And here we let go of all the false notions of those who were harming us. Remember? That's what that list is for. It's going to replace that list we had before. Everybody was against us, you know. We were the most abused people in the world. Poor souls. Now we make a list of the people we had harmed. Again, we let go of these dishonesties and we let God fill our hearts again with an honest appraisal of ourselves as He sees us. The ninth step, made direct amends to such people. Now, that takes a lot of humility to do that, you know. But we let go of our pride in doing that. And Lord knows, the alcoholic needs humility more than any other human being in the world. We let go of the fear when we approach others and make amends because we need courage. We let go of deception because we need honesty. And we let God handle the results. The tenth step, continued to take personal inventory. And when wrong, promptly admitted it. And here we let go of all our former excuses. Remember those excuses? We had them by the carload. And when we ran out, we manufactured some more. And here again, we face God. We face ourselves before God as He sees us. No longer excusing. Because we need honesty so badly. The 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out. And here we let go of all our cares and our workaday world and relax in the presence of God. The 11th step to me is the most important fuel for serenity of the entire AA program. Relax in the presence of God. Let it go. Let it go. 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And here we let go of all our former attitudes. May they rest in peace. For now we have a new attitude, an attitude of the Spirit, a spiritual awakening. We see things in new light. We even recognize things we never saw before. Some things we passed every day. Beautiful things in life we never saw before. And carrying the message, and here so many say, well, what am I going to tell them? It's simple. Tell them what happened to you. That's what the big AA book tells us. That's all. Not what they have to do. Not that what they ought to do. Not what's going to happen if they don't do. Tell them what happened to you. This is what happened to me. And thus, we let go of all the old-time ideas of using the heavy stick to make the alcoholic sober up. It don't work. And then practice these principles in all of our affairs. Now here we might hesitate. We might think, well, if I do these things, people are going to call me a pious puss, Bible thumper. Let them go. Let them go. Let God come into our lives, not only our spiritual living, but in our entire area of life, in our work, in our play, in our relaxation, in our homes, in our business, with our friends, in our groups, in our AA, in everything. Why not? God is a practical person. And the strange thing is, and this I always used to answer those who might say, this spiritual stuff, I'm practical. I don't believe in it. What they don't realize is that the most spiritual people are the most practical people. Just try it. It works. It really does. Now let's take just a couple or so of our problems in life and see how this works. First, resentments. Let them go. No matter what happens to irritate us, let it go. God can do a better job than I can of anything that might irritate me. And if there's vindication to be done, remember what it says, I am the Lord, I shall have vengeance, revenge is mine. And that word mine don't mean me, that means God. So let him go. Let him go. They talk about you, let him go. After all you have to do in AA is do something, you'll get talked about. Let it go. Somebody calls you an SOB, you either are or you aren't. Let it go. If you are, well, then so what? And if you aren't, there's no use becoming one by getting mad about it. Then a neurosis, which we hear so much about, you know. That's quite a mute question, whether every alcoholic's a neurotic or not. You answered. I'm not going to try. But you know what a neurosis is? A neurosis is usually a person who hasn't ever made up their mind who's going to be the boss, God or them, body or soul. And so there's conflict. There's tension. And then there's a neurosis. Then avarice. You know, it's amazing how tight alcoholics become after they sober up. Let go of those bucks. Give away some of that loot. Of course, I know some will say, well, I worked for what I got. Well, you did. Who gave you the power, the ability, and the position in life and the circumstances? that enabled you to do that? Don't you think that might have been God? Better give a little back. Might lose it all if we don't. On one grand and glorious binge. It has happened. You know, that's the enigma of AA, how tight people become when they come into AA. You know, the poor chairman or the secretary of the group asked for a little extra help, and everybody yells to high heaven. Then they bring out that old time-worn excuse, no dues, no fees, what the heck. When they reach in their pocket for that 2 bits, you can hear their elbows creak. Let it go. Then let God give us security. After all, what does money mean in the matter of security? I could lose it all tomorrow. But God will never let me down. Let go. Let God. And then humility. Let God make us humble. You know the difference between humiliation and humility? Humiliation is being humbled against my will. If I willingly accept it, then I am humble, and I will become humble. And so, in closing, when the reality comes, which it will for all of us sooner or later, and sooner the later, and as we are bidding our last farewell to this land of sorrows, then that prayer that has fallen from our lips tens of thousands of times in AA, I feel shall surely be heard. God then will grant us the serenity, the undisturbed faculties of the soul, to accept that final thing we cannot change, which is death. And at that moment, he will give us the courage to change the final thing we can, our temporal abode for one eternal. And two, he will grant us the wisdom, along with that courage at that moment, to realize and to understand that we are then only taking the 13th step into eternity. And then it'll all be over. All the heartaches and the loneliness and the disappointments and the deceptions and the criticisms and the pain and the suffering, the sorrow and the sin and the anguish and the shame of it all will be a thing of the past. And then throughout all eternity, we shall thank God that he has given us 12 little steps on which we have descended to peace of mind and true serenity here below, in order that thus we were enabled to finally ascend to eternal serenity with peace of soul and him forever and forever. And then alone shall we fully understand the enigma of God, his greatest paradox, that we must die to live, that we can keep only what we give away, that we can only get by letting go, that by suffering alone can we ever fully understand our fellow man. And finally, that the only victory is achieved by absolute, unconditional surrender to God. May he love you all forever.